Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the U.S. pledges more pressure on the Islamic State. The United States says it's stepping up its attacks against Islamic State or ISIL targets in Syria and Iraq. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter telling U.S. lawmakers Tuesday there could be more raids like the one last week in which U.S. troops advised Kurdish forces on the rescue of dozens of hostages in Iraq.
Signaling that we won't hold back from supporting capable partners in opportunistic attacks against ISIL or conducting such missions directly, whether by strikes from the air or direct action on the ground.
President Obama has so far ruled out the use of U.S. ground troops, but Senator John McCain says a more vigorous approach is needed beyond the Islamic State.
The struggle for power and sectarian identity now raging across the Middle East, the epicenter of which is Iraq and Syria. That is why ISIL exists today with the strength that it does, and this problem will only get worse the longer this conflict rages on.
Defense Chief Carter vowed to deliver a lasting blow to IS insurgents. The chairman of Tanzania's main opposition party Tuesday said he doesn't recognize the results announced so far in that country's election held Sunday because of what he called widespread rigging. Freedom Mbo is chairman of the Chadema party.
There's a lack of transparency completely, and it's our expectation that the international observers' report should never be biased. They should be able to tell the truth and not favor the government of the day, because the whole process has been flawed. We have seen some fake ballot papers and ballot boxes, fake documentary being stretched around. We have seen excessive use of force.
He warned the country's peace and stability could be at risk. Chadema, widely seen as giving the ruling CCM party the toughest challenge since independence. This is VOA News. In Central African Republic, at least six people killed in separate sectarian incidents. Three members of the Union for Peace, a faction of the Muslim Salika Alliance, were abducted by unknown gunmen Monday in the capital Bangui and killed. They reportedly were on their way to take part in conflict resolution talks. Later that day, three people identified as Christians were abducted in a Muslim enclave in the city and killed in an apparent revenge attack. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned the airstrikes that hit a hospital in Yemen. He called for a prompt and impartial investigation. It occurred in North Yemen's Sada province. The medical charity Doctors Without Borders said Tuesday the Saudi-led airstrikes hit its hospital, but there were no serious casualties. Megudich Terzian is the group's president.
99% of the compound is destroyed now. So it was a miracle for me that we didn't have any victims, despite the fact that all the staff were in the hospital and they were considering that the hospital is a safe place to stay during the night. So it was not the case, unfortunately.
Sada province, site of the airstrikes, is controlled by Iranian-backed Shia Houthi forces. A Saudi-led coalition has been conducting airstrikes in Yemen since late March, targeting the Houthis, who had forced President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi to flee the country. European Council President Donald Tusk had a dire warning Tuesday about the unfolding migrant refugee crisis facing Europe. He spoke to the parliament in Strasbourg.
I have no doubt that this challenge has the potential to change the European Union we have built. It has the potential even to destroy achievements such as border-free travel between Schengen countries. And what is even more dangerous, it has the potential to create tectonic changes in the European political landscape.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees announced more than 700,000 have arrived in Europe so far this year, fleeing war and poverty in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. A U.S. defense official says it's likely the U.S. Navy will make more patrols near islands claimed by China and other countries in the South China Sea. The guided missile destroyer USS Lawson Tuesday passed to within 12 nautical miles of a small reef China has been expanding into a larger island through large-scale dredging. China denounced the U.S. patrol, declaring it was dangerous brinkmanship in waters that carry half the entire world's cargo. In Ivory Coast, Reuters reports President Alassane Ouattara has taken a commanding lead in results so far from Sunday's election. The Election Commission says he's captured between 85 and 99% of votes tallied in six of the country's 31 regions in his bid for a second five-year term. Several opposition candidates have alleged fraud, but observers so far have given the ballot a clean bill of health. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The long-awaited African Union Commission of Inquiry report on South Sudan's conflict has been released.
We are not concerned about it because we believe that the culture of impunity must end. And this is actually setting an example for Africa as a whole, that if you kill your citizens, you must be held accountable.
Ambassador Ezekiel Lo Gatkuoth is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. South Africans marched in Johannesburg for economic equality. The opposition in Congo-Brazzaville rejects the results of Sunday's referendum, and vote counting from Sunday's Tanzania presidential election continues as public anxiety grows.
It's too early to predict an outcome, but if you go by what has happened up to this point, yes, CCM is leading
That's VOA's Vincent Mankore in Dar es Salaam covering the Tanzanian election. Millions of elderly Kenyans are working because they cannot afford to retire. And Sao Tome says a new Chinese deep-sea port has economic, not military purposes. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The long-awaited African Union Commission of Inquiry report on the South Sudan conflict has been released. It finds that both the South Sudan government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar committed human rights violations, some of which constitute war crimes. But the commission says it did not have any reasonable grounds to believe that the crime of genocide was committed during the conflict. The commission says it has identified possible perpetrators on both sides that might bear the greatest responsibility. Ambassador Ezekiel Lo Gatkuoth, Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, says the rebels are now worried because they believe the culture of impunity must end.
Of course, if you can recall, in many statements from the beginning since 2014, January, my chairman, Dr. Riek Machar Teng, the leader of the SPLM, SPLA in opposition, has been consistently calling for this report to be released. He has been calling for those who are responsible to be held accountable for the crimes committed during this war. Finally, now it is released. We are very happy. We welcome it.
Ezekiel, I must admit that the report says the commission believes that war crimes were committed by both sides, that human rights violations were perpetrated by both sides, meaning the report finds that your group, the SPLM in opposition, also committed human rights violations and war crimes. Your reaction?
Well, if you look at it, all of us, including my chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, he was a victim. He was being apprehended. If he was caught at that time in Juba, he would have been killed by the government. So he was running for his life. Myself, I was not lucky enough to run away. I was arrested. My charge was treason, put on trial. But I was acquitted because there was no proof of a coup attempt or a plot even to think of overthrowing the government forcefully. So we were all victims. There was nothing that you can hold us accountable. If you look at it, the response by the White Army and all the citizens of the Nuer community, they were reacting to what was happening in Juba, the killing, the genocide, which was happening in Juba. Everybody was reacting to that, and they were coming to Juba to rescue their kinsmen. And so the SPLM, SPLA in opposition, was organized in 2014, April, May. That's when it became an organic movement. But by then, everybody was running for their lives. The blame game of both sides will not hold water. But of course, if there are individuals who are actually found to be responsible for violating international law, they should be held accountable regardless of their positions in the government and elsewhere.
Ezekiel, in one aspect, the commission said it has identified possible alleged perpetrators that might bear the greatest responsibility using the standard of reasonable grounds to believe that gross violation of human rights and other abuses have occurred during the conflict. But the report did not name or list those particular alleged perpetrators. Is your group concerned that eventually these names are going to come out and that some of your members might be implicated?
We are not concerned about it because we believe that the culture of impunity must end. And this is actually setting an example for Africa as a whole, that if you kill your citizens, you must be held accountable. So for us, even if it is one of our kind, So we will not spare anybody. Whoever is actually found to be responsible for gross violations of human rights and war crimes and crimes against humanity.
What is your view on the conclusion of the commission that the struggle for political power and control of natural resources revenue, corruption, and nepotism appear to be the key factors underlining the breakout of the crisis that ravaged the entire South Sudan?
I agree with them on that, because if you look at it, that's why Dr. Riek was calling for reforms in the country. The resources and also the power of the state and employment of relatives. So the resources of the Republic of South Sudan are being used to enrich the families of the ruling leader.
Ambassador Ezekiel Lo Gatkuov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He was speaking with me from the state of New Jersey in the United States. Vote counting from Sunday's Tanzania presidential and parliamentary elections continues, and anxiety is growing as the public believes the Electoral Commission should expedite the release of the results. VOA's Vincent Mankori is covering the election from Dar es Salaam. He said based on the little results that have been released so far, the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party has taken an early lead.
Yes, the Electoral Commission has been announcing results almost on an hourly basis beginning Monday morning. Also throughout the day yesterday on Tuesday, and what they've been doing is to announce the results for the parliamentary seats from different parts of Tanzania, along with the presidential numbers and votes for the presidential race from all the regions as well.
Let's take the parliamentary results. Who is leading in terms of the various districts? Who controls most of the municipal regions so far?
So far, the ruling party, CCM, is leading. And both parliamentary and civic seats. And at the same time, you know, someone would say they're yet to complete the process. It's too early to predict an outright win. But if you go by what has happened up to this point, yes, CCM is leading Chadema Party.
There was a report I read that said that some of the cabinet members are losing their seats. Is that from the ruling party?
Yes, some of really influential cabinet members of CCM have lost their parties, have lost their seats in different parts of Tanzania. That has come as a surprise to many because some of them have served for many years in those positions that it was thought that those were their strongholds. But then that is how elections seem to be happening. Quite some surprises here and there.
Do we know who is in the lead so far on the presidential level?
Yes, what's happening is that the Electoral Commission is not giving you the totals up to this point in terms of who is leading at the presidential level. But what they're doing is they release the numbers. You know, if you collect those numbers up to this point, you get the sense that the CCM party is leading, perhaps by about 15% to 20%. Of course, again, the numbers are yet to come from all regions of Tanzania. But that is how things stand right now. CCM is ahead.
Vincent, I read one account from the local media there where some business people are urging the Election Commission to release the results, not piecemeal, but as quickly as possible, particularly on the municipal level, so that what they refer to as to diffuse tension, which some of the business people feel is disrupting their business activities. So is that the feeling there, that people want the results to come out as quickly as possible?
Yes, people are growing impatient. They do not understand why 2 days later they cannot have results from all parts of Tanzania, given that all these were counted at the polling centers. And all that was to be done is to send the results or the numbers to the central office and just verify them and announce them. They do not understand why there is a delay.
That's VOA's Vincent Mankori in Dar es Salaam covering the Tanzanian election. Today is Wednesday, October 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Opposition parties in Congo-Brazzaville are rejecting the results of Sunday's constitutional referendum. The results show the referendum passed with 92% of votes, clearing the way for longtime President Denis Sassou Nguesso to run again in 2016. Nick Long has more from neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo.
An alliance of opposition parties called FROCAD called for voters to boycott this referendum. It claims that nearly all of them did. FROCAD spokesman Guy Romain Kinfusia disputes the official turnout figure of 72%. He claims the real turnout was more like 3%.
Nous le récusons. Nous demandons à Monsieur Sassou de retirer.
We reject the results, he tells VOA. The opposition will ask Mr. Sassou Nguesso to withdraw this result and sit down for inclusive talks on holding elections in 2016, in which he will not be a candidate. Kinfusia adds if Sassou does not agree, the opposition will continue with civil disobedience. The European Union called last week for an inclusive dialogue in Congo-Brazzaville as a matter of urgency. According to FROCAD, the voting process on Sunday was a sham.
C'était pas secret. Monsieur Sassou et son équipe, ils ont promené des électeurs dans des bus.
Kinfusia says the government took groups of voters by bus to several different polling stations where they did not have to present voters' cards. He also says people were paid to vote. Analyst Paul Melly, who follows Congo-Brazzaville's politics for the research organization Chatham House, says the result was in line with all of the Republic of Congo's polls since 2002.
Basically, the government controls the election process very strongly. Most opponents know that they're fighting a very unequal battle, and very many voters can't see any point in participating at all. So the official figures that have been announced are completely unsurprising. Anecdotal on-the-ground evidence suggests that turnout was actually very low in many places.
One of Congo's leading opposition politicians, Guy Brice Parfait-Kolelas, has been under house arrest with about 30 of his supporters since last Thursday.
Nous avons demandé à Monsieur Bativille, qui est le représentant de Monsieur Ban Ki-moon.
Kinfusia says his group has asked the United Nations to negotiate Kolelas' release, but Sassou has refused without explanation. Kolelas has complained he is running out of food as presidential guards surrounding his house have confiscated supplies. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma, DRC.
Supporters of his South African left-wing political party filled the streets of downtown Johannesburg yesterday to march in favor of government interventions to ensure greater economic equality. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the march coincides with a nationwide shutdown of some universities.
The marchers numbered in the thousands. Their first stop was the Reserve Bank of South Africa. There, the marchers, supporters of the political party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, demanded a national bank that will give no-interest loans to poor South Africans. Moving on to the Chamber of Mines, the Economic Freedom Fighters demanded nationalization of the country's mines and better wages for mine workers. The march ended at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. There, the party protested what it says is a trend of whites and foreigners owning the majority of companies. EFF party leader Julius Malema called for economic transformation.
If they are not going to respond, they must expect a complete shutdown. The whole of South Africa. Gone are those days where white capital will do as they wish.
Tuesday's march comes against the backdrop of nearly 2 weeks of nationwide student protests against proposed university tuition hikes. The students won a concession last week, with President Jacob Zuma announcing a 0% hike for 2016. But some student protesters have vowed to continue because they say their bigger aim of economic and educational equality has not been met. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The financial services firm Alexander Forbes says more than 40% of Kenyans cannot afford to retire and as such must continue working. The firm says another 40% rely on family for support. The survey paints a sad picture for Kenya's ability to care for its growing aging population. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
65-year-old Dominic Ologi runs a tap water kiosk. He spent 3 decades working in the public and private sector. He stopped working 10 years ago, but he is one of millions of Kenyans who can't afford to retire.
During these times, I had a lot of time in my hands. And to supplement what my wife was bringing in, I looked at my environment, what my environment was lacking at that time.
Ologi, like many Kenyans, has no savings of his own for retirement. He gets 7,500 shillings, about $75, a month from his state pension. Alexander Forbes administers financial and retirement funds in the region. The South Africa-based firm says Kenya has the lowest mandated pension contributions on the continent, just 10% of income. The head of Kenya's Retirement Benefit Authority, Edward Odundo, says workers need to save more.
If you know if you retire, you should be able to get at least 40% of what you used to earn. But if you are getting less than 10%, it shows that you have a big deficit, just even in the basics.
National Social Security covers most of Kenyan workers, but the scheme is plagued by corruption and management issues. Officials say contributions are low and thus payouts are low. Workers are resisting efforts by the government to increase the monthly contribution to 12%, half from the employer and the other half from the employee. Alexander Forbes says nearly half of retired Kenyans depend on family members to survive. 22-year-old Wasonga Jacob says he doesn't have a problem supporting his parents.
It's just nurturing in us as human beings to support or also give back to where we came from. Because look at it from this angle. They have taken care of you from since you're young up to now, taking care of you up to school. And so literally it is also socially acceptable or socially moral to give back to mom and dad.
However, 27-year-old Faith Mutisia says it is a burden.
I guess it's a bit hard because staying here in Nairobi is not cheap. When it comes also to rent and, you know, you are paying all that pension for me, I pay for three people, is not easy.
The World Health Organization says Kenyans are living longer than they did 20 years ago. That, combined with the ongoing population boom in Africa, means pressure on the state to provide for the elderly will likely only intensify. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Angolan rapper and activist Luadebe Rao has ended his hunger strike after 36 days due to pleas by family and friends amid concerns for his health. But he and 14 other activists remain in prison in Angola. They face charges of allegedly plotting against state institutions after they were arrested in June at a book club meeting. Melissa Moorman, an Angolan expert and associate professor of African history at Indiana University, tells Ricky Stryak the activists were discussing books about democracy and dictatorship when they were arrested.
He decided to announce and to end hunger strike because he's had several requests to end it, requests from important political figures, from celebrities, a public request from his wife, and obviously lots of private requests from friends, his family. 36 days on a hunger strike is nothing small. Just a couple of days ago, there was a doctor saying that I think after 30 some odd days, you begin to have irreversible effects. Health effects.
Can you give me a little background about why the Angolan government says they have imprisoned these people and what kind of charges they're facing?
There are 15 of them. They're all civil society activists. A good number of them are also rappers. 13 of them, in fact, were arrested on June 20th when they gathered for a book club. They were reading Gene Sharp's book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, and also a book by Dominguez de Cruz, who is an Angolan activist who's written a book about basically disbanding dictatorships. Dominguez de Cruz and another man were then arrested in the following days, which gets us to the number of 15. They have been held since that time. Initially, they were held under the terms of preventative detention. At 90 days, legally speaking, that preventative detention expired. And after those 90 days, they were then held illegally. They had not been presented with a formal charge or any kind of indictment. That indictment finally came through in early October, well past the period of preventative detention. That accusation, which was filed against them, was of preparatory act to rebellion and assault against the president of the republic. So essentially conspiracy against the state.
And as I understand it, their trial is scheduled to be held in mid-November. Are there concerns about whether they will have a fair trial or not?
Yes, given how they've been treated so far, the fact that they were held in preventative detention long past the period in which that was legally done, which was 90 days, and the fact that there was another political prisoner in Cabinda who's been given a six-year sentence for similar charges, there's tremendous concern that they will not, in fact, receive a fair trial. And the fact that the evidence, the bases for such a charge are very, very slim. They include reading the book and the fact that the book was allegedly used by the revolutionaries in Egypt and Tunisia in the Arab Spring.
What is the political and government climate like in Angola right now? And based on Angolan law, are the freedoms of speech so tight that that could be interpreted as illegal, or is it more kind of trumped up charges?
These are essentially trumped up charges. They have legal constitutional rights to freedom of expression and to freedom of assembly. These are civil society activists who have been active since March of 2011, many of them, and they have repeatedly been met with repression and violence when they've tried to organize. Angola is a, you know, in name, a multi-party democracy, but they do have, their rights are guaranteed by the constitution, but they are consistently denied. It's only the state that's actually ever allowed to organize demonstrations and things like that. Now, the very important thing in this particular instance is that they have galvanized a tremendous amount of public support.
That was Marissa Moore, Associate Professor of African History at Indiana University and editor at the website Africa is a Country. She spoke to Ricky Stryak from Indiana, USA. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with hockey. Nigeria outwitted Tanzania 3-0. South Africa dismissed Ghana 4-0. And Zimbabwe overwhelmed Botswana 19-0. In the men's contest at the Africa qualifiers for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic hockey event. In the women's contest, South Africa dismissed Zimbabwe 6-0. Namibia beat Nigeria 3-1. And Ghana overpowered Tanzania 12-0. Today, Wednesday, in the men's hockey, Kenya faced Tanzania as Egypt engaged Nigeria. In handball, Tunisian defending champions Club Africains pipped Morocco's Wydad 25-23 in the quarterfinals of the men's contest at the Africa Handball Club Championships in Nador, Morocco on Tuesday. Egypt's Alexandria edged Morocco's FAP 28-24. Tunisia's Esperance beat the Democratic Republic of Congo's JSK 27-22. And in an all-Egyptian showdown, Zamalek edged their arch rivals El Ahly 26-24. In football, defending champions Nigeria tackle Australia at the start of the knockout phase at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Viña del Mar in Chile today, Wednesday. In Olympic news, the United Nations has approved the observation of an Olympic truce from the 29th of July to the 25th of September next year. The period covers 7 days before the start of the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics and runs until a week after the Rio de Janeiro Paralympics. Following a resolution passed by 180 out of 193 UN member states, countries of the world agree to halt all conflicts and confrontation for the duration of the two global sports events. The International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach emphasized that competitive sport and the Olympic ideals have a role to play in society in promoting peace, fair play, tolerance, solidarity, and understanding among people. This is the spirit in which Olympians mingle in the Olympic Village. In concrete terms, this means where there are armed conflicts anywhere in the world, a ceasefire will come into force for the duration of the two games. The Olympic truce has its antecedents in ancient Greek society, where warring parties set aside their differences to compete in lively sports. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tanzania's ruling party presidential candidate John Magufuli took an early lead Tuesday, but several key cabinet ministers lost their seats as vote counting for Sunday's national elections continued. The ministers lost to candidate representing an opposition alliance that includes Chadema, the main rival to the long-ruling Chamacha Mapinduzi CCM party. That is it for this Wednesday, October 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we follow up on Sunday's elections in Ivory Coast and Tanzania as votes are being tallied to determine who will lead both countries for the next 5 years. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests for an in-depth analysis on the elections. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa. Voice of America's news, talk and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.